This is a CBC podcast.
Political watchers of a certain age will remember the decades-old debate around privatizing Crown corporations. Back in 2007, you might remember a famous NDP ad campaign. It accused the then-opposition Saskatchewan Party of being, quote, a wolf in sheep's clothing. I can still see that commercial in my mind's eye. They were claiming the Sask Party had a secret agenda of privatizing Crown corporations. But after more than 15 years of the Sask Party rule, the Crowns, they're still intact. This, even as the party has shifted to the right. Joining us now to unpack this and more is one half of our political panel. I'm not even part of the political panel usually, so you're it, Murray.
Pretty much it, yeah. As I tell Adam, the bigger half in weight. But
Murray Mandrake writes a column for the Saskatoon Star Phoenix and the Regina Leader Post. Adam Hunter is on his way home from Las Vegas, where he was watching Canada and U.S. play basketball. Stephanie Langenegger is on holidays. So you're stuck with me, Sam McKeag, the TV host.
Perfectly fine. Perfectly.
This is like a precursor to us getting ready for the fall election.
Absolutely.
We got a sense this week of how profitable Crown Corps were, SaskTel, Sask Energy, Sask Power. What stood out to you?
Believe it or not, I like money. I don't have much of it, and is seems evident by the way I dress, but I like money. And so in that regard, what stood out for me was a big number, $854 million. That's the number of the dollar number of dividend money that the Crown corporations over the last 5 years have provided the government for paying teacher salaries, paying nurses, paying doctors, building roads, building schools, everything that we do. And that's a huge number. In this past year alone, it was $152 million. And interestingly, actually $136 million of that dividend total came from gaming, and it's now moved under the Crown Corporation venue as opposed to being directly a government asset. Some might say this is just moving money around in terms of government, but here's why I think that's a big and important number. Also, the fact that we're seeing $578 million in net earnings, according to the Crown Investments Corp, from these Crowns, which is a very positive, solid number. And you don't normally get that number from governments in recent years. You usually get them on the deficit side. But the Crown corporations are still doing what the Crown corporations have done in this province for years, which is providing valued service, keeping our lights on, keeping our homes warm in the winter, and still, notwithstanding the difficulties of transmission, of changes to the economic environment, of needs related to greenhouse gas emissions and tremendous expenses in terms of conversions to capital expenditures that we need to deal with all the things we're dealing with. Notwithstanding all this, they're still providing lots of dividends and lots of profits, and that speaks to the value of a Crown corporations that 20, 30 years ago we were once again having conversations about privatizing.
Why do you think the Sask parties kind of steered clear, moved away from talking about privatization, even though it's moving right into other areas? There was a time where we'd see those little balloons go out and we'd see how the public would react to things, particularly when Brad Wall was premier, but we haven't seen that in a long time.
We haven't. And some people will argue that they are reacting because we don't have a Saskatchewan transportation company, but it never made money at all. Last time was profitable. I was literally a teenager. That's how old it is. So, like, I mean, we're talking decades. So it was sold off. Liquor stores were more of a dogmatic, philosophical thing because they got out of the retail business, but kept the wholesale business that's actually the more profitable end and always has been the more profitable end for government. I guess that's the bottom line, Sam. As dogmatic as they are about social conservative issues that we saw on Bill 137 that may or may not affect a huge number of people, well, it affects an incredibly small number of people, but it's a social conservative issue that seemed to have traction, or so the Sask Party thought. It obviously believes its supporters, its base, its potential voters see the value in the Crown corporations and what they provide to the province in terms of money, as I outlined previously, and otherwise. And this is sort of the unique thing about Saskatchewan. You can be conservative and dogmatic about certain issues and less so about others. 30 years ago, it was thought that, you know, the Grant Devine government 30, 40 years ago was pretty dogmatic on economic issues related to wanting to sell Sask Energy, mm-hmm. Sask Power, et cetera. That's obviously changed a lot. A lot's changed under the Sask Party administration, moving from Brad Wall to Scott Moe, including a number of people running. But, like, I mean, what hasn't changed is this one particular issue, and, like, notwithstanding no longer having a bus company and government-owned liquor stores, we still have a publicly owned telco, and unlike a lot of places, we still have publicly owned electrical and home heating services, which is quite different than most of the world.
Do you think it's the certainty, though? Because the government is also one of the biggest employers in the province, and those crowns employ a lot of people. So whether or not fiscally you agree with the Crown Corporation, if it's your employer, you're probably going to go with the certainty and hope that they stick around.
Well, that's a great point. You know, in North Regina, that used to be solid NDP country, and it may return to solid NDP country after the election, given the last by-election results. But that said, in places where you have a strong tradition of people working for the Crown Corporations, in cities like Regina, they're quite happy voting SAS Party. Notwithstanding all the talk we had 20, 30 years ago about Wolseley Sheep closing, I remember those ads mm-hmm. too, and they were ineffective in terms of Brad Wall's win. And Brad Wall solidified the notion that he was going to own Crown Corporations and keep at least the major utility crowns mm-hmm. intact. And I think that you're right. I think it's partly due to the 11,000 people that work for them. There's jobs being provided. So far, even the other more right-wing parties, like the Saskatchewan United Party, haven't been screaming bloody murder about that, which you think they would, because mm-hmm. They're even more dogmatically right-wing on, I think, a few economic issues. They're calling for smaller government. But most people aren't, and I think the SAS Party are wise to that.
In your latest column, there's one line that really stood out to me. And it says there's enough former Sask Party MLAs, people who are not running in the next election, that if they so choose, they could form their own government.
Yeah, it's that's from the last two elections. In this election alone, there's 22 Sask Party MLAs. I shouldn't quite say that, but there were 22 people elected as SAS Party MLAs in 2020 that are not running again. Mm-hmm. And if you look from going back to 2016, that number leaps up to 32. The weird thing is we normally only have a handful, you know, less than a dozen people who retire at any given election. 22 is a surprising number. And going into the 2020 election, we only had seven mm-hmm. retiring SAS Party MLAs. So there's something about that number that I find just absolutely fascinating. And if you add the total of floating out of SAS Party MLAs floating out there that could possibly run in their old seats, they could, like I say, they could form their own government. Now, interestingly, I don't think they want to, because not everybody is retiring in a way where they're disenchanted with the government. We have the Donna Harpowers and a few others that were obviously strong SAS Party loyalists. But we're also seeing a few people come out of the woodwork, Randy Weeks being the most notable, expressing their huge dissatisfaction yeah. with the way SAS Party has run and the way Scott Moe has run things compared with Brad Wall. And there's a few others. Greg Burkich, the old Iron River MLA, who retired before the last election, has expressed several things. I think there's a lot of people doing it a little bit more quietly, Sam, because they're still being involved in politics, but they're going elsewhere. They're going to city politics like Gord Wyatt. In the case of Stephen Bonk, he is running for a federal nomination mm-hmm. following the path of Cory Tucker and Warren Steinle, and why they've chosen to stay in politics but not in provincial politics to me is rather interesting. And I think a lot of it has sort of the idea of opportunity, in some cases not getting in cabinet. Why Stephen Bonk was removed from cabinet as an economic development minister, his record is in previous worlds is working internationally in trade mm-hmm. Is rather stellar, and at least compared with the experiences of Jeremy Harrison. But I think that we're getting into areas where people are starting to whisper and raise concerns. We certainly saw it in the time Mr. Harrison was in hot water when it was feel that he had brought a gun to the legislature. People were talking, as like Randy Weeks, about the discontent with Mr. Harrison and his influence on Scott Moe. There's a couple others in the same boat, and the concern is Scott Moe, the guy that had 22 MLAs stand behind him, and when he made his announcement in 2017 that he was running for SAS party leader, is now seeing the guy is a guy that maybe only listening to a few, and I think that's another factor that's contributing to that big number of people not running. As I say, 22 retirees from one election, 31 odd people out floating out there that could, or 32 odd people floating out there that are former MLAs. Mm-hmm. That's a lot at any given time.
I think that we're going to have so much to talk about come the October election. I have already bought flashcards because there's going to be so many new names, and there's not a lot of the name recognition. And that's kind of where I want to leave this with you today is as we start to see more people start to step into those seats as these people are retiring and walking away, there's not any big names that have really come in yet.
It's interesting. And notwithstanding what should be happening, which is renewal, people get old. I'm old.
Well, 2 decades for a lot of these MLAs,
it's
too,
it's a long time, like 2 decades in politics. 10 years is a long time in politics. You think, and you start, because you start later in life. So you think having younger people step into the roles is natural course. In some cases, like Jeremy Cockrell, that has happened. But generally, that's not happening. In terms of at least the very winnable seats, we're seeing people about the same vintage running to replace the people that are retiring. Mm-hmm. So this isn't a great renewal exercise for the SAS party, as you say, and more pertinently, there's not a lot of name recognition in terms of some of the candidates. The SAS party is trying to promote a few, particularly women in the cities, which is good, and which is what they have to do. But generally speaking, I don't think that they've carried out the renewal process very well. Really, it's kind of the same problem I think Roy Romano had 20, 30 years ago when he and other MLAs held on to the reins of power for maybe a little bit too long, and people just got tired of them. And people get tired of elected officials in politics. We're seeing it federally right now. We're seeing it in the U.S. We're seeing it in a lot of places. And maybe for the first time, we're actually seeing evidence of that with Scott Moe. But weirdly, I don't think any of this is going to have much effect. You can run anybody in Mooseman to replace Steve Bonk and they'll win. They've had nothing but a SAS party MLA.
Right.
And I can't remember last time they didn't have a conservative-minded MLA.
Well, thanks for this, Murray. Lots to think about as we rush forward to that October 28th date.
Great talking to you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Murray.
Bye.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.